So one of my most important lessons in prayer happened as part of my training to be a minister about 20 years ago. I was serving as a hospice chaplain. I may have told you this story, but bear with me as I share it again in another way. I was in the city of Lawrence, Massachusetts, which is quite a diverse community. And so people who came to the hospital were from many, many cultures, many languages, many experiences. So I met with people who had different religions and people who had no religion. And I was talking with people who weren't interested in religion at all. In fact, I was standing in a doorway being introduced to a woman who was having a very hard time by the head nurse, who said, "Would you like Reverend Brammer to come visit with you?" And the woman in the bed said, "No, I'd rather have an enema." And so I learned a lot of things about prayer, including humility, right? A lot of humility. So I learned gratitude when it seemed there was little to be grateful for from the patients who were able to pray with gratitude. I learned prayer that could strengthen people in body as well as in mind. And in this particular story that actually transformed a person's physical experience. So this one particular patient was dying. He lay very much alone in his room. And because he was delirious, his arms were secured to the sides of the beds because he kept pulling out the IV systems where the pain medication was being given to him. And he thrashed, even with his arms and his legs bound. He thrashed, and he was unresponsive to human contact or voice. And I stood by his bed, and I felt so sad for his pain and his aloneness. But I was being trained to be a minister, so I was going to be brave. I introduced myself to him because I had learned that people in comas and all kinds of delirium often are able to hear what's being said, even though they're not able to respond. So I asked permission to sit on a chair, and hearing no response from his bedside, I sat down. I tried talking to him quietly, calling his name, describing and reading the cards that were on his bedside from people he loved. No change in his obvious suffering. But after a few minutes of this, I kind of gave up. I kind of crumbled inside. I lost courage. I felt pretty useless in my ability to help. But there was one last thing that popped into my brain, which is that I knew from the cards by his bed that he had been Catholic. And on a whim, I decided to recite the Lord's Prayer. And so I began, "Our Father," and he began to still. "Who art in heaven," he stilled even more. And by the second and third lines, he would mumble every other word or so that he could manage in his mouth. It was the same for the 23rd Psalm. "The Lord is my shepherd," and he spoke that psalm. I'm certain that my understanding, my experience of the sacred, is far afield from what his probably was, and many, if not most, believers who say these prayers regularly. But I witnessed his saying that prayer and that Bible verse changing him. Maybe there was an intervention from beyond what I could not apprehend. But I felt the sound, the cadence itself, reminded his brain and his body of what it felt like to belong, what it felt like to be still. Is there a god or a goddess? I don't know. Do I think there is a being at the other end of every prayer deciding whether or not to be helpful or intervene? No, I don't. I also believe I cannot know. And that's all right with me. But I do know that prayer can change a moment in extraordinary ways. I've witnessed prayers change a person in the moment, like the gentleman lying in that bed, and maintain a person's sanity and sobriety through long periods of time. I know prayer has changed me. Yet, I do not do it consistently over a long period of time. I have not prayed often for chunks of time in my life. Probably for some of the same reasons that many, if not most, Unitarian Universalists, and I might add Unitarian Universalist ministers, do not pray consistently. Many of us have rejected the mainstream idea of the guy in the sky responding just to me individually. So if there is no one there, no there, then why would I pray? Many of us are impatient and I think rightly disturbed when people do not work to make the world a better place, choosing instead to opt out and let God do it all, that this is part of God's plan. I cannot accept that, and I know many of you cannot accept that, but then why would we reject prayer altogether? Our UU tradition, Unitarian Universalist tradition, is grounded in the necessity that we move our feet, use our hands, speak, and lend our truth and our skills to increase love, justice, and equity in the world. So we do, but yet many of us, and most of us, do not pray. And some of us are embarrassed by how prayer feels counter to reason, counter to intellect. It seems unreasonable. Some of us feel injured by religious traditions that we have removed ourselves from. There have been abusive ways of using those practices. Others of us just don't know how to pray. So I have admitted that I have a fickle relationship with prayer and meditation, and I seem to go through cycles of practice. I usually pick up a practice when I notice that I'm off the beam somehow, not being who I most want to be in my life. Now seems to be one of those times in which I'm exploring what a practice that feels authentic and vital to me personally at this time in my life might be. I think, when I'm really honest with myself, that the reason I'm calling myself to do this again is because I'm afraid. I'm afraid and overwhelmed deep down as I support a group of teenagers in my hometown who identify as part of the LGBTQ community and find over half of them struggle very seriously with anxiety, and at least two have been institutionalized. I'm afraid I will falter in my ability to support my parents. A lot of you know that I am living with my aging parents, and it's pushing me to deepen my spiritual practice. I'm afraid that I will not know the next best step to lead and share my leadership here with you and in the world that so badly is in need of justice and compassion. Heck, the elections would probably be enough to push me back into a prayer practice if everything else were reasonably calm. So I've read lots of books. I've worked with different mentors, and this time I picked up a book by Reverend Kate Braestrup. She's a UU minister. Some of you may know her work. She wrote There If You Need Me, or Here If, was it There If You Need Me? Here If You Need Me. She is a chaplain for the Maine State Game Wardens, not Game Wardens, for the Warden Service, which means the, well, it says here, it's the Maine Warden Service. Often, she goes out into the woods with the frontline responders looking for a missing person. Often, she'll go when someone has broken through the ice. Often, she'll go when there's a terrible accident. She's there to serve our frontline people and also the families of those who arrive on such a scene. So she's written this book called Beginner's Grace, and she's hilarious. She's pretty unorthodox. She's very brave, and she has six teenagers. So she's grounded in reality, right? She gives reasons to pray that have nothing to do with whether or not one believes in a god or goddess. She's the daughter of a New York Times journalist and is steeped in rational thinking. So these are her reasons to pray, to live consciously, to reduce anxiety. That's one. To live honorably and counter self-indulgence that is so rampant in our culture. And the third is to live compassionately. I can get on board with those. So I'm not alone in this room, knowing that at least once in a while I need help with those. So we want, as Unitarian Universalists, in Kate Braestrup's words, consciousness that is capable of increase. I don't know why those words catch me, but I want consciousness that's capable of increase, and I want empathy that's inclined to expand rather than shrink. I want empathy that's inclined to expand. So this is the right book for me at this time. It's been on the shelf for more than a year and a half. You might remember that I began to go to the gym to build my strength, also related to wanting to be of more use to my parents. And because I want to be able to hike again, I want to be able to go up mountains, which is one of the most inspiring things I can do. So I go to the gym, and she actually writes about gyms in here, exercise, because she too has been working on developing her strength. She too, like me, is not thrilled at making her muscles burn. And she doesn't yearn to be there at the gym every day, hardly. And I admire those who get to that place as well. I have no judgment about it. I'm not there. I'm not that person. But she is saying that exercising regularly and hard is actually done to make us able to exercise more. I just wanted to shut the book and put it down and walk away. That sounds awful to me. I mean, isn't there an endpoint? You know, can I just, you exercise in able to exercise more. Well, when I think about it, I'm exercising in part so I can be stronger for my parents and so that I can climb mountains. This is true. All right, so I can accept that much. Prayer is like that, she says. If we pray to be able to metaphorically hike again. If we pray to be more conscious, more aware, and more awake in the world. If we pray to be less anxious and more present to each other, and to our families and our friends. If we pray to live more honorably and with less self-indulgence, then, well, why would I not want to pray more regularly and sometimes even pray hard? To be more awake, more loving, more compassionate, less anxious, more joyful. I'm still not thrilled with working out in the gym, but I have managed to internalize. I get it in my gut somehow that I really want to build my capacity for strength, physical strength. So I'm exercising, unlike any other time in my life. That's not related to just going hiking or walking long distances, because that was my favorite exercise. But I have trouble with my feet, so I can't do that anymore. But I'm exercising now regularly. My motivation comes from a different place. With the help of Kate Braestrup, I'm beginning to sidle up to the possibility that I really want to build capacity for clarity and joy through prayer. I know darn well that until I really internalize it the way I've internalized going to the gym, rather than relying on my passion for life, which has gotten me through thus far, I have prayed a lot, pushed by my passion, by despair, by desire. But I know that passion gets overwhelmed sometimes So I know that I want to develop this internalized sense that it matters that I pray on a regular basis, because I want to build capacity for joy and clarity and being present and making a difference in the world. But I know that until I internalize it, that I'm going to waver every day, because I'm going to sit there and think, why am I sitting here trying to calm my mind, saying yes and wow and thank you and thank you, thank you to the world, instead of accomplishing the next things on my list or writing down the fabulous ideas that are coming into my head as I sit? Why am I doing this? I will waver, but as I practice prayer and meditation, I suspect that I'll build my capacity to live with more clarity, live with more love, even as my passion falters and becomes overwhelmed, even as the world feels more and more crazy to me, which it is. I have studied prayer and meditation for decades with different mentors through varieties of traditions, and all have served in some way. And right now, the simplicity and the down-to-earth way that Reverend Braistrup brings prayer to me is serving me well, and I hope maybe it will mean something to you or help us be in conversation about this. Minimally, I think it'll help us be in conversation about this. So the author boils the essence of prayer down to three things: saying yes to the fact that there's something much bigger than me that's more important than anything else. So saying yes, and saying, wow. Wow. I'm alive. Wow. And saying thank you. Those three prayers. So the yes is in part an antidote to going to sleep, losing consciousness. I think many of us as Unitarian Universalists are hungry for truth. And so we are many of us working for that, staying awake, asking questions. I don't know that we need a lot of help with it, but if we are totally overwhelmed with anxiety or rage, it's really hard to stay the kind of aware and conscious that we're talking about here. The wow part, I think, many Unitarian Universalists do really well. Many, many of us relate to the earth, the planet, all of the elements as a source that we understand to be deeply connected to, and that really, really matters to us. And the thanks. I do ask myself and us to be honest with ourselves about how much of our time we spend in our own minds and hearts in gratitude, and how much of our time here in a group we spend in gratitude for one another. It's one of the most important forms of prayer. Why don't we say thanks before we eat together? I think because we're awkward. I think because we don't want to push our beliefs on each other. I think it's because we haven't done it. We're in a momentum that's not moving. But why don't we say thank you before we eat? And what about teaching our children to pray? Now, there is a hot item. So this has been a live issue for me for the 20-plus years that I've been a minister, because parents are really conflicted about this. We all, as Unitarian Universalists, really value, in our heart of hearts, choice, freedom, open-mindedness. And so it feels really wrong to tell a child what to pray. And yet, when it comes to our child's well-being, we encourage, if not control, what children will eat until a certain age. What please and thank you. What children can and can't do. So why is prayer off limits for so many of us? Why is it? We are afraid of this feeling of brainwashing that so many people in coming out of religious traditions have felt have felt abused or not seen in their own religious traditions, and they leave it. So we don't want to do that to our kids. However, if prayer is about reducing anxiety, being less self-indulgent, being more grateful, why not pray? Well, I think it also has to do with something about our assumption that one person gets to decide who we're inviting to, or what we're inviting to help us, or what we're thanking. Who or what is this prayer directed to? So that may actually be a good place to start with figuring out how it is that we get stuck around not praying and not teaching our children to pray. We could probably agree, for the sake of argument, because I know we'll argue about it, and it's a good thing that we'll argue, but for the sake of argument, we decide it's good for children's health to pray. What we would never agree on is who the children should pray to. And the young people who are here, I trust, would not want to be told who they should pray to. You have your own minds and hearts, your own experiences. And you're older, and I'm glad you're making those choices. Do we pray to God, to Goddess? Do we teach our children to pray to Jesus, the Buddha, Allah, a minor god or goddess, Great Spirit, our ancestors, truth, clear mind? Because we don't resolve this, we do not pray. I think that's probably accurate. You may have noticed this in some of the ways that I pray. I alternate sources sometimes to try and include the different ways in which people pray. But I know for some people the fact that I pray is uncomfortable. And that's a part of the journey. Finding in our own individual hearts and as a community, what's the vessel, what's the way of being together that isn't going to encourage each of us into our unique and necessary spiritual paths. So there is one of the things that motivates my having approached this sermon again is that I have had conversations with Unitarian Universalist parents who needed to leave Unitarian Universalism because there was a tragedy in the lives of their family, and they felt that Unitarian Universalism didn't offer a core deep enough for the children in particular to get through, that they didn't know how to pray, that I feel myself as a minister that not having agreement about who to pray to or what to pray to is not a good excuse not to pray. That if the act of prayer helps us know we belong, if the act of prayer brings us a cellular memory of belonging, why not pray? I believe, actually, that man strapped to his bed, he was not responsive to any words, but there was a cadence. There was a cellular memory in his body that helped him be still. There's all kind of research about how prayer, no matter how you pray or who you pray to or meditate, when it's done with good intention, it can help people use less pain medication and to be out of the hospital sooner. The science behind that is argued as much, and most science is argued. However, there's enough evidence that prayer and meditation with good intention can heal and support and help. And our local scientist up here says, well, it's probably the placebo effect. And I have to say that that's a scientific response, and there's more information, and we have to be brave enough to look at it. Because what if? It makes a difference. What if prayer makes a difference? So I wonder what we can do about the who we might pray to or why or what we might pray. If children learn patterns of song and prayer, like the earth is good to me, and so I thank the earth, if that becomes a part of themselves, or go now in peace, may the spirit of love surround you, if that becomes part of the fiber, might they be able to fall back on that? Might they be able to have it pass through their minds when they do not feel like they belong, when we feel terror, when we feel anxiety? So here's a thing that Kate Braestrup suggests. If we're trying to create a scaffolding of sorts onto which, you know, a habit, a scaffolding, a feeling of a prayer that will help as we grow and change in our lives for us to attach our new found beliefs to, a new way or an additional way of praying, if we've got that scaffolding, we can add to it. But without the scaffolding, it's a lot harder. So Kate Braestrup says, try thinking about the sentence, nothing is more important than blank. Nothing is more important than blank. What would you put in that blank? Nothing is more important than love, truth. What else, Bob?
Concentration
and focus. Nothing is more important than
health,
family, saying thank you, gratitude. Nothing is more important than whatever you place in that blank that is true for you can become the basis of your prayer. If your motivation for prayer is to intentionally help yourself feel belonging, to keep your mind open, to be more conscious, to be more compassionate, whatever you put in that blank will have a purpose for you, will serve. We go with love. Spirit of love, help us to increase love in this house, in this community, in this country. How about nothing is more important than community. Spirit of community, help us feel safe with one another's hearts today. How about clear mind? We call on the power of truth. We call on the power of clear mind to help us interrupt the rhetoric and hatred that brings us to the brink of violence. Instead, let us find the next right thing to say to bring us closer together. Oh, ancestors, ancestors, what would you do? What would you have done? What should I do now? O Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. May those who are hungry have food to eat, and may those who are well fed hunger for justice. Bless this boat I float in, for it is so tiny and the sea is so, so large. I place myself in the middle of the stream of power and wisdom which flows into my life. So I'm going to move on and then have us come back, okay? Thank you, Bob. So I'm bringing us to a close here, intending that we have a conversation with each other about this, of course. Is prayer something you rely on or that you're allergic to? Do you feel a need, as I do, to build our capacity, your capacity to be conscious, compassionate, and grateful? Have you tried to pray or stopped praying because prayer feels meaningless or false? And might there be another way to think about it, knowing that there are many, many more ways, many more purposes to practice? And can you imagine teaching and encouraging children to pray as a source of health and well-being for their lives, even as their beliefs and experiences change.